Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on Thursday, the 5th of January of the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk to artist Jacob Stoltz about his solo show opening Friday at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. George Kuhar will be here with a preview of the Saturday performance of original gospel music at the Rookery. We'll also talk to Lori Craig from the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center about the Fireside Lecture Series going on. And Nancy DeTruni will give us a rundown on art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. That writer's almanac music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with isolated snow showers, low temperatures around 29 degrees. Forecast for Friday looks like rain and snow developing by the afternoon with accumulation of 1 inch of snow expected, high temperatures around 33 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Residents of a First Nation in Western Canada are trying to take back control of their community by banning gang members from the reserve. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the members voted by a wide margin to give that power to their band council.
The Samson Cree First Nation in Alberta has had its share of crime and violence. Last year, the chief's 5-year-old grandson was killed by a gunshot while sleeping in his bedroom during a drive-by shooting. And in 2008, a toddler was shot in another drive-by shooting as she sat at the kitchen table eating supper. Just about all the violence is gang-related. Officials estimate there are about a dozen gangs fighting for control over the drug trade on the 4 First Nations that make up Hobima. About half of the 14,000 people who live there are under 18 years of age. Yesterday, people on the reserve voted to give police the power to ban some members from the reserve. Band counselor Kirk Buffalo says the shooting death last year of the 5-year-old boy spurred many to support the ban.
This really come to light when we had the drive-by shootings of 5-year-old Ethan Yellowberg soon after the shooting of his aunt. And the violence has to stop. And much deliberation with the RCMP, with the community. The community now wants to stand up and says, we want to take control over our community.
But some on the reserve are skeptical. They say most of the drug dealers involved live in towns and cities outside the reserve. The community and police have tried different measures over the years to reduce gang activity and violence. Police say banishing gang members won't in itself solve the problem, but could be another tool that the community could use to gradually improve the situation, in addition to parenting classes, addiction counseling, better street lighting, and shutting down derelict houses. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Now for our series on Native health and wellness. Yesterday, a fitness expert shared tips on eating. Today, we take a look at strength training at home, whether your goal is to train for a sporting event or shed some pounds. The Wellness Center at Tejotzo Medical Center on the Navajo Reservation has some advice. The Wellness Center in Fort Defiance, Arizona, developed a strength training workout for people to do at home, for those who live in remote areas or who want to exercise in the privacy of their house. Alfreda Barton is a wellness coordinator. She says they use everyday household items. The workout starts with a warm-up by turning on some music and dancing around for 3 to 5 minutes. Then a broom and mop are used, sweeping and mopping to strengthen the upper body. For weights, they use 5, 10, and 20-pound blue bird flower sacks, which are often found in many Navajo households.
You could do things like arm curls. You can do things like overhead, like lifts. They call it overhead lift, where you lift it over your arms, or overhead exchange. You hold a 5-pound in one hand, bring it overhead, and then you exchange it to the other hand, and you do those over and over, and it really works their arms and the side of their rib cages.
Barton says the workout also includes other arm exercises and abdominal work.
Sit a little far forward in the chair, and then they would hold the 5-pound, and they would twist side to side, doing an ab twist. And these are called Russian twists in the weight room. And, you know, holding a 10-pound flower sack, you can really feel your abdominals working.
Barton says cans and water jugs with liquid or sand can also be used as weight. As a cool down, Barton says fold laundry like towels or clothes. She says talk to a personal trainer to make sure you're doing strength training moves correctly to reduce the risk of injury. Happy 25th anniversary, National Native News. On this day in 1987, National Native News signed on the air in Anchorage, Alaska. It was the first nationally syndicated daily radio newscast to focus on the Native angle in every story. The show is produced today in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. It's heard on tribal and public radio stations across the United States and Canada. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:06 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guest is Jacob Stoltz. He's an artist. He's having a solo artist show at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Jacob, thank you very much for being in the station with us today.
Thank you, Jeff. It's great to be here.
So first of all, your work is pretty darn graphic. What inspired it?
You don't mean graphically violent, do you?
It looks like a comic book.
Yeah, I think by graphic you mean really lots of crisp blacks and whites, and you can really see them from a distance, kind of. And I'm really influenced by comic books and old illustrations and old posters.
What's your background as an artist?
I've been drawing since about third grade, doing little comic books and giving them away and selling them. And during the past few years, I've been doing freelance illustration, doing posters and CD covers and things like that. But I'm really just beginning that career. I've just doing it kind of in my spare time until recently. Now I'm doing it more full-time. And so this show is one of the first big things that I've done since really starting my career fully. So it's in my typical style, which is a classic comic book style.
What comic book artist do you look up to?
My greatest influences, I think, are Jack Kirby and John Buscema from the 1960s and 70s Marvel Comics. Their inkers have really beautiful brushwork and really dynamic compositions. And then there's a more contemporary comic artist named Gilbert Hernandez, who does independent comics, and I really study his work a lot as well.
In your artist statement, you talk about humor being missing from a lot of fine art. Do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah. I have nothing against landscape paintings, and you'll probably start seeing some of my landscapes in the galleries here somewhat soon. But every once in a while, I think it's good to mix it up and have some humor in there. But also, if you have artwork that is trying to convey a message, a political message or a social or moral or any kind of message, humor is a great element. Parody and satire is really good to get that point across in a strong way, because if it's funny, people take it into their heart. But I've just had the work in this show are these sort of New Yorker style cartoons. So there's usually one picture with a caption, and I've had these in my sketchbooks for years now that I've written myself that just have come to me. So this is just a chance for me to kind of get them off my chest and put them out there in public and see what people think.
Like any good comic, you're able to tell a story in one panel, two or three or four panels. What kind of story are you trying to tell?
I think each of these pieces might tell a little story individually, but like you said, they don't tell a story in a linear way from one to the next. Within each one, there might be a little story, and you can kind of read into it however you'd like. and I I do have plans for more of a book-like story in the future, but these are more just kind of one-hit wonder type of things that you'll kind of get the story pretty quickly and move on to the next one.
Your work has an edge to it, a sexual edge. Is this for all ages?
A sexual edge. There's a sexual edge to a few of them. I think it's probably about a PG-13 show, so parents strongly cautioned for children under 13, but, you know, about that age and up, I think they will find it funny and a bit edgy, but younger kids probably just wouldn't understand the humor, but nothing too offensive, I hope.
Talk about your process of doing it. You use a Bristol board, but no whiteout.
Well, there is a little whiteout here and there, but I really made these drawings as fine art. I didn't, you know, when you draw something for reproduction, you can really just fill it in with anything black, like a Sharpie marker. But these I used the same ink to, and I did layers and layers of ink to give it a really smooth and even black. And I was pretty good about not making many mistakes. So you won't see too much white out in most of them.
So you come up with an idea and then make a few sketches and then use a light box to complete your work?
Yeah. I have this really great light table that's like 30 by 40 inches. And so that way I can do my sketch on a sheet of sketch paper and then just trace that with ink for the final piece. So that, because normally when you do this kind of artwork, you put the pencils down and then do the ink right on the same piece of paper. And then you will probably have to erase the pencil away. So with this method, I'm able to make a really clean final product that looks good. The original will look good, whereas most illustrations that, you know, you might see in a magazine or a comic book, the original is not going to look as good as the reproduction, because you can clean it up on the computer and through the printing process it gets cleaned up. So I really strive to make these look the best as originals.
I mentioned earlier your work was graphic. I mean, black and white, a very strong graphic. And talk about the tools you use and your choice to be so graphic.
My main drawing tool is a sable brush, a round sable brush, which is, I use a number 2, which is really small. And I've just kind of trained myself in the use of that, which is kind of what the old artists used. And that gives you really good variations of line. You can get really graceful lines with that. And then I also use the the metal pen nibs that you dip in ink. And those give a nice, you can do really good hatching and cross-hatching with those. Those are my main tools.
I'm talking with artist Jacob Stoltz. He's got a solo artist show at the Juno Arts and Culture Center opening tomorrow, Friday, during First Friday here in the capital city. What do you want people to take away from your work?
Well, if I could bring a little laughter to the people who come and see it, that would be great. Maybe if they see one of these pieces that would bring a little joy into their homes, they might enjoy buying one. And just to put myself out there to Juno, that I'm here and I'm a freelance illustrator, and so you can see a nice showcase of what I can do at this show.
How many pieces are in the show?
There are 16 for sale. And then there are a couple more that are just kind of like a title page and my artist statement that are not for sale.
Where are you going to go to from here?
I've got a bunch of ideas for some illustrated books, children's books. So I've got a bunch of those on the back burner that I'm excited to work on, and I've always got a few commissions going.
All right, Jacob Stoltz, the solo artist, show at the Genoa Arts and Culture Center tomorrow, during First Friday, the next door to KTUO building in the corner of Egan and Whittier. Jacob, anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
No, I think that's it.
Thank you for coming down on the show today.
Thank you, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 5th of January, 2012. It's the birthday of Stella Gibbons, London, 1902. She wrote a parody of romance novels that became her first and most famous novel, Cold Comfort Farm, came out in 1932. It's the birthday of the poet W.D. Snodgrass, Wilkinsburg, Pennsylvania, 1926. He studied writing at the University of Iowa. He said, "I wanted to write plays, but my plays were lousy. The only way they could have gotten worse was for me to do what my teacher was telling me." His first book of poems was Heart's Needle, 1959, dealt with the pain of his divorce, the loss of his daughter through the breakup. He showed his poems first to his teacher, Robert Lowell, who said, "You've got a brain, you can't write this kind of tear-jerking stuff." But Lowell later changed his mind about that. It's the birthday of the author Ngugi Wa Thiong'o, born James Ngugi in Limuru, Kenya, in 1938. In 1964, he published the first East African novel written in English, Weep Not, Child, based on his family's troubles during the Mau Mau uprising. There followed two other novels, The River Between and A Grain of Wheat, and around that time he renounced any ties to the old colonial days and changed his name to reflect his Kikuyu heritage and became Ngugi Wa Thiong'o, and he stopped writing in English. He wrote a political play, was sent to prison for it in 1977, and while he was in prison, he wrote Devil on the Cross, the first novel in the Kikuyu language. Wrote it on toilet paper because he was denied writing paper. His most recent book, Dreams in a Time of War, a memoir of his childhood. And it's the birthday of Umberto Eco, born in the Piedmont region of Italy, 1932, philosopher, medievalist, and best-selling novelist. His book, The Name of the Rose, was a big bestseller in 1983, as was Foucault's Pendulum. Eco once explained his productivity, saying, "There's a lot of space between atom and electron and electron. And if we reduce the matter of the universe by eliminating all the space in between, the entire universe would be compressed into a ball. Our lives are full of interstices. I can work in the toilet, in the train. While swimming, I produce a lot of things, especially in the sea, less so in the bathtub, but there too." Here's a poem for today by Naomi Shihab Nye, entitled Shoulders. A man crosses the street in rain, stepping gently, looking two times north and south, because his son is asleep on his shoulder. No car must splash him, no car drive too near to his shadow. This man carries the world's most sensitive cargo, but he's not marked. Nowhere does his jacket say fragile, handle with care. His ear fills up with breathing. He hears the hum of a boy's dream deep inside him. We're not going to be able to live in this world if we're not willing to do what he's doing with one another. The road will only be wide. The rain will never stop falling. Shoulders, a poem by Naomi Shihab Nye, from Red Suitcase, published by Boa Editions Limited, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, you can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vedder. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Juno's most eclectic musicians, George Kuhar. He's in the studio right now. Tomorrow night at the Rookery, actually Saturday night at the Rookery, he'll be doing original gospel music for an Aquarian Age. George Kuhar, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Hello, Jeff. How are you today?
Pretty good. So, original gospel music for an Aquarian Age. What does that mean?
You know, we're in a time of transition right now where we're moving from one phase of life into another. And I think it's important at this time to welcome change and welcome newness and welcome seeing the world and seeing the universe and seeing God all with fresh eyes and a new vision. And I think people are ready for that. And that's what I'm hoping to accomplish through my music and through my art.
Is this going to be gospel music like people are used to?
There might be some aspects that sound a bit more traditional, and then there might be some aspects that sound not so traditional. But I think that's precisely the point, is that we're moving into a new time with a new sound, but yet honoring our roots, of course.
What's the composition process like for you?
The composition process? Usually, honestly, I start out with my instrument, and I play it, and I sing in tongues, meaning I don't necessarily have words that are in my mind at the time. So I'll sit in front of a microphone, and I'll push the record button, and just make sounds. Whatever my soul wants to make, whatever sound it's feeling, it'll just come out. Just vowels, consonants, but no real words. And then later I'll go back and I'll listen to it. And then the words pop out to me when I'm not singing them. I'm just listening to the sounds. And that's pretty much how it goes almost all the time.
The instrument we just heard on the song Fruit Falls was a ukulele?
That was actually a guitar. I can't play my acoustic guitar with six strings anymore. This surgery that I had on my left hand. And so, by necessity, I've had to cut down to four strings. And I've taken the two heaviest strings off. So it makes my nylon string guitar sound a bit like a ukulele.
Do you give a notebook with ideas and then you go from the notebook, or do you come up with ideas and then just go right to your instrument?
I think it's a bit more nebulous than that. There's things are in a notebook and things are in my mind and things are out in the air that people are saying, and I can't think about it too much. There's a certain combination, and when it happens, it happens. I can't necessarily force it. And not everything ends up on paper, though.
Gospel music is a mixture of a lot of different types of music itself. What goes into your mix?
I'm sorry?
Gospel music is a mix of a lot of different styles of music, blues and and rock sometimes, and sometimes folk and spirituals. What's in your mix?
What's in my mix? Catholicism. I was raised Catholic, and I sang in the choir in church, which is quite a bit different than singing in a Protestant choir, I found out. I was raised on a healthy diet of Willie Nelson and Elvis Presley, and when I was a young teen, I became very much into blues, and at the same time into songwriting. I was really fascinated with the process of songwriting, and it has, by and large, become the work that I do, not necessarily for money, but the work that I do just because I have to. Nobody tells me to do it. It's one of those things. Everybody has that thing that they would do it. No matter what money or prizes or rewards come back to them, just the sort of thing that you have to do to fulfill yourself as a human being. So songwriting has definitely become that for me. And for a good time, I was also really into Motown, very much so. Through most of my early 20s, I listened to nothing but Motown.
I've seen you perform. You've performed with more instruments than just a four-string guitar.
I also have a ukulele, too, but mostly to be on the guitar.
You did some work with electronics as well.
Yes, I'm not going to be doing any electronic stuff for this show that's on Saturday night. But yeah, Bridget and I also are working on an electronic project. We're in the process of recording a record. Under the title name of Playboy Spaceman.
Where did that name come from?
Bridget came up with it. We went on a Mount Rainier climb some years back, and there was one fellow who was on the climb, and he had the most fashionable mountain climbing clothing you might have ever seen. And being up at 12,000 feet at 2 o'clock in the morning is quite a bit. like being in outer space. And so when we were coming down, Bridget commented on this fellow, this well-dressed mountain climber, and she said, "What was up with Playboy Spaceman?" And that really rang a bell with me. And then when we started putting this electronic group together, that was the name that just jumped out of necessity.
What should people expect when they go to the Rookery on Saturday night to hear the original gospel music with From an Aquarian Age?
What should they expect?
Should they expect to hear something they've never heard before, or expect to hear some bits of things they've heard before with a George Cukor slant to them?
I should hope that they hear something they've never heard before, and if all goes well, people will hear it with their ears, and they will feel it somewhere deep inside.
What time does the show start?
It starts at 7 o'clock. My friend Brian Nichols is going to play a set of blues music for about 20 or 30 minutes, and then I'll come on, and they're going to have beer and wine. I think this is the first time the Rookery is going to have a beer license for an event, so this will be very exciting.
And how much does it cost to get in?
It is suggested $7. If you can't afford that, that's okay. We'll take you anyway.
We're going to wind up the interview with a tune that you put together with your partner Bridget Cross. It's not gospel music. It's not blues. It's Nosferatu.
Oh yeah, yes. What's interesting about this song is it was a song that I was just writing when we were starting a project, working to set music to a 1920s vampire film. And I played it for Bridget, and she's like, "Oh, that should be in the movie," and I just went along with it, and it turned out to be really good. It turned out to be the main theme for the program, and I think it does hold pretty close to the gospel music theme, because it's all centered around the same idea that I've been working on for the past several years, and hopefully coming to fruition now, Saturday night at the Rookery at 7 o'clock.
All right, George Cukor, thank you very much for coming down to the station today. Is there anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, sir. Thank you for having me, as always. Thank you.
I'm on the phone with Laurie Craig from the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center. Laurie, thank you very much for being on the air with me today.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, Jeff.
What's happening at the glacier these days?
Well, you know, we have these two beautiful spots of bright blue on the front of the glacier, one on the west side and one on the east side, because the glacier's been really active through the winter. And for some reason, and I suspect it's a matter of the temperature and sort of the formation of ice, the blue color lasts longer during the wintertime than it does in the summer. In the summer, within 24 hours, the dense blue color can disappear as the warm air breaks down the surface ice and turns it to white. But we've got some blue spots out there that are just stunning. And then the icebergs have been rolling over a lot lately. You know, we've had such a mild winter that icebergs that, you know, they're continuing to melt from underneath, and boop, one of them just rolls over and churns up all the ice around it so it's wet again. And it's been a very interesting winter, but beautiful out here. Everything is snowy, and we can still spot mountain goats, and that's always fun.
So with the icebergs rolling around, you probably don't want to encourage people to go swimming by the glacier.
We would kind of prefer that they not do that. And the thing that's kind of hard is you can't tell how thick the ice is when it's covered with snow. And the icebergs are really dynamic, and there's a real current running underneath the lake, both from the glacier and from the waterfall heading over towards the river. So it's real hard to know how safe it is, and people frequently come in and ask me, is it okay to go out on the lake yet? And I, you know, from what I've seen here in the wintertime, I won't ever go out on the lake on this side. It's just too dynamic.
Speaking of glaciers and photos by John Hyde, there's a great display of photos by John Hyde of the Mendenhall Glacier at the Virginia Douglas City Museum concurrently.
Oh, that's great. Well, this is a beautiful place for people to come take pictures. And they do it all year round. I saw one of the local photographers the other day, and he was on his way out to see the ptarmigan. I had put up a notice on our Facebook page that one of the locals came in and told me he saw four ptarmigan out in front of the visitor center. And, of course, they're all white except for their little black eyes and their little black beak. So they're kind of hard to find. But that's what makes it fun, is you get your own sense of discovery when you come out here.
And it's not an area you want to encourage dogs to venture out in.
Well, it's nice if they take it easy and they still stay on their leashes. You know, we don't have the bears to worry about, but there are still other wildlife. And I actually watched a dog fight the other day, and it's really nice when you can keep those dogs in control, both for the sake of your own dog and for the other dogs, too.
And what are the hours of the visitor center?
We are open Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 10 in the morning till 4 in the afternoon. And, of course, coming up Friday on January 6th, we start our fireside lectures. And that's one of the most popular things that we do here at the Visitor Center. Do it primarily for locals, and every Friday night in January, February, and March, we have a wonderful free lecture that runs twice because it's so popular. So the first one is at 6:30, and the second one, the repeat of the first, comes at 8 o'clock.
And this Friday's presentation is all about the weather.
It is about ocean waves, and Joel Curtis from the National Weather Service is going to be our speaker. And for those who attended last year and remember Joel's presentation on tsunamis, everybody knows that he's a great person to kick off our first fireside because he's a very exciting and fun speaker. And he's going to be talking about ocean waves and how they're generated and what happens when they roll across the ocean and hit the shore. And not only is he going to talk about that, but he's also going to share a little bit of what it's like to be in those waves, because he's one of those guys that gets into their toughest outerwear and goes surfing at Yakutat. So we're going to learn how Joel does that tomorrow night, or Friday night.
And a preview of what are some of the upcoming lectures?
Well, let's see. Let's just go through the January ones, and I'll talk to you again in a little while about what the other ones are. So on Friday, January 13th, Stephen B. Lewis from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will talk to us about eagles. He's been putting little tiny backpacks on them with GPS transmitters to track where they're going. And he's been particularly focused on the movements of eagles around airports to be sure that both planes and eagles are safe. That's on Friday, January 13th. On Friday, January 20th, we'll have the program be on the Pack Creek Bears. And not just on the bears, but it's primarily with some students. Lindsay Culver and Martina Miller have been working with the Forest Service and part of an intern program last summer, and they'll be sharing their thoughts as well as Harry Tullis, who works with them from the Forest Service. And that's the Pack Creek Bears, and, you know, they're just down the way a little bit on Admiralty Island. And then the fourth Friday of January, we've got a program called Prickly Neighbors, and we're going to learn a little bit more about porcupines, which seem to be pretty ubiquitous here in Juneau. And the most common question we get in the summertime from visitors is, I didn't know they climbed trees. And, of course, they do climb trees because that's what they're eating in the winter and in the summer. And Jesse Coltrane is coming down from Anchorage to talk to us about porcupines, particularly what they eat and what they do in the wintertime.
I'm talking to Lori Craig about the happenings at the Mininauk Glacier Visitor Center, including this Friday on the time for Joel's lectures.
The time for the lectures is at 6:30, and it repeats at 8 o'clock. We have a little break in between so that we can make room for more people. And that little break is what's so much fun because it's a social time. We serve warm refreshments and some cookies so that people can have a nice time just standing around like we're having a party in the living room. And we like to have everybody have that sense. So come on out to the visitor center. It has the area, parking areas have been plowed, but depending on what the conditions of the surfaces are, you know, you might want to bring your ice cleats to get through some of the parking lot areas until you can get to the sidewalk.
All right, Lori Craig, thank you very much for coming down. Is this information on the web as well?
It will be there shortly, and of course we have a Facebook page. People can just search for Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, and we try to post things pretty quickly there. The web page is not quite ready just yet.
All right, well, we'll get you on the air, one of your speakers, as often as we can on the show.
Thank you. Everybody have a good, safe winter.
On K2 is supported in part by the Juneau Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juneau Artist Gallery is open year-round, located downtown in the Senate Building.
Time is 3:46 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau, where we've invited again Nancy Dettoni from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council to come and tell us what's going on.
Once again. Well, it's First Friday this weekend, tomorrow. So we have a few things to talk about. It's probably a little quieter because everybody's still recovering from last month's First Friday Gallery Walk, but there's quite a few really exciting shows. If you have not seen the shows at the Alaska State Museum, you might want to take those in. And it looks like you guys are putting up something new. What do you got over here?
Actually, it's re-showing the same work that we had last month, but it's a lot of great stuff, although we won't be open First Friday.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, it's a lot of great stuff. I hadn't noticed it the last week I was here. So
I should thank Charity Green for putting it all together.
Thank you, Charity. Anyway, you were just talking with, we have Jacob Stoltz over at our place, and he was just on. Interesting graphic artist, so that's something to start with. And, of course, you want to start over there anyway so you can get your little map. Kind of simultaneously, starting about 6 or 6:30, we're going to have something called Thunderfest starting. This is a Thunder Mountain High School band event. It's going to go on till midnight. It's open to all ages. Anyway, but let's see. Alaska Litho has Southeast Seasons, photos by Ron Guile. And they will also have some folks there to talk about publishing books. So if you're thinking about publishing your own book, stop by Alaska, I think it's the Alaska Litho on 230 Seward Street. Talk with them about that. I didn't get a hold of Annie Kales to find out what she's doing. Sometimes they take January off, but I'm sure they'll be there, so drop in. Bee's Bistro is going to be closed. Figment has Fox in the Chicken Coop, Alana Balam-Schwam. We'll have her artwork up. And the Franklin Street Gallery has a really exciting show called Have Paint Will Travel. A bunch of artists that travel and then do their painting while they're traveling will be there. So stop in at the Franklin Street Gallery there in the Baranoff. And I think Dan will be playing music, of course. Charles Rohrbacher is the featured artist at the Juno Artist Gallery. He's got his new book, we hope, will arrive, Illuminated Easter Proclamation. So check in down there. The City Museum is having Bound, New Bindings by Sherry MacDonald. I didn't really get a sense of what's going on at the Kodiak Coat Company. Silverbow has still got Mustafa, and I think Heritage, the two Heritage places, have their same exhibitors. The Canvas has Interior Spaces by Monica Dougherty, and Wilderness Peaks, Temple Joanna, has got a whole bunch of really cool stuff going up. So it'll be a nice evening to walk around and do a few things. Saturday, quite a few things going on Saturday also in the music department. Oh, I should mention, I believe Lyle Hebert's movie has been postponed until March, and it was supposed to open tonight. So if you were thinking about doing that, I believe that's accurate.
It's true. They're fixing some of the sound issues.
Sound issues. I know how that goes. For those of you who are thinking about doing that tonight, you can put your feet up. Gold Street Music, the Taku Gales, and a whole bunch of other people, the Empty Oil Barrel Group and Steve Nelson, a whole bunch of folks will be at the Resurrection Lutheran Church at 7:30 on Saturday.
And the Tangs and Beth Leibowitz and Dale Wagen, too.
It's going to be a great evening of music. That's just $5. If you need more information about that, 463-5413. It's also the Midwinter Vocal Festival concert they've been rehearsing. This is Juno Lyric Opera's annual event. It's out at Chapel by the Lake. It's at 7:30 on Saturday. On Saturday in the morning, actually, the City Museum is doing their coffee and collections. It's a free thing, and you get coffee from Heritage. It's always yummy. Jane Lindsay will be talking about collecting contemporary art, and she will have some of the local artists that they have collected art from there to talk about the whole process. They got some money from the Rasmussen Foundation that has allowed them to add to their collection. They'll be talking about that. Also, if you're interested in learning to sew, Rain Tree Quilting has a whole bunch of sewing things going on. Saturday, Sew a Cuspuck. You can call them at 789-7900. It starts Friday night, actually, so you could do that. And then they have a Learn to Sew class that'll be on Monday. You can tell that it is spring. Oh, wait a minute. There's something really cool happening on Saturday from noon until 4. The Jewels of Downtown. It's a historic home tour that's being sponsored by the Gastineau Historical Society. There's a limited number of tickets available. You should call 586-5338 to get your reservations. You can pick the tickets up down at Hearthside Books. This is an opportunity to visit some of the more exquisite older homes that we do have here in Juneau, something I've always wanted to do. Go back to, it's getting to be spring. Have you noticed how spring-like it is out there?
That makes me think of May already.
So the Master Gardeners are starting their series of classes, and the first one is on Wednesday. It'll be at 12:05 at the Jack, and the topic is ferns, mosses, and ornamental grasses. This is presented by the Southeast Master Gardeners, and Chris Myrtle will be the person speaking. If you would like more information on that, it's 796-6221, but I always look forward to their it means spring's coming. I actually got a seed catalog in the mail yesterday. So
I thought you looked very seedy today.
Now, you know, the other thing we should mention is mudrooms. This is the second event, Real People, Real Stories. It's sort of patterned after This American Life, but it's local folks telling their stories. This will be at McFeeters Hall. There's a $7 charge, which benefits some charity.
Glory Hall.
The Glory Hall. And it is at 7 o'clock on Wednesday. This is they said they had real success with this the first time. They're hoping to make this sort of a regular event. So if you're interested in either telling a story or listening to some really neat stories, that's on Wednesday at 7 o'clock. There's a new book group forming also, Books and Faith Discussion Group, that is at the Downtown Library. It's free. It's at 6:30 on Tuesdays. I think I covered it all. It's a quiet... Oh, you know, it's important that if people are interested in getting into the Wearable Art Show, the deadline for your application is Monday. The application form is online, but you do have to come into the Arts Council to pay your... fee and to pick up your tickets. And I would like to note that we're fewer than 200 tickets left for the Saturday show. So don't hesitate if you're thinking about going to that. What else we got going on? Mayor's Awards for the Arts. We need some nominations for that.
And I understand you're having a meeting about meetings and planning events.
That will be on Martin Luther King Monday, which is January 16th. We will have, we annually get together and have everybody put everything that they can think of that they don't want other people getting in the way of on the calendar. So if you're planning, say, a large fundraising dinner or something like that, good idea to come to this event and find out who else was thinking about doing something big on that same weekend. We plan the entire year from July through around to the next June. I have a big calendar there. And then afterwards, we'll have a little bit of time for people to sort of talk about things that are going on in their organizations and talk about some things that are going on at the Jack. It is a time where if you were thinking about renting the Jack for something, you get first dibs at putting your name on the calendar all the way out. So it's a nice community thing, and, you know, we're trying to get the calendar to work for everybody, so come down and make sure that your items are on it. It doesn't have to be arts items. It can be any important community event. We'd like to know about it.
And speaking of calendars, if you're doing one of these events, make sure that you list it with the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council's website.
Which is also on the KTOO website. So that's how you get the news out there. It's www.jahc.org and send an email to the email that's noted there. I think that's it. We'll see you Friday.
Thanks for coming by, Nancy.
Thank you.
It's 3:57, and you are tuned to the Tony Rice Unit here on KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT Service Huna at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait here, KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard at digital channel 872, and KXLL can be found at 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. Tune in to the Alaska Identity Project tonight as host Adrian Lopez interviews Juneau Mayor Bruce Patillo from 7 o'clock until 7:30, and then talks with a few of the members from the Conference of Young Alaskans being held in Juneau this week from 7:30 to 8 p.m. Tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, we'll talk with Katie Bosler about upcoming UAS classes, plus get a preview of the Sound and Motion series of presentations. We'll also talk with Byron McGilbury about Saturday's Midwinter Vocal Festival concert, Writers on My Next Music, and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies, patchy fog this evening, low temperatures around 29 degrees. Forecast for Friday, chance of snow in the morning, then occasional light snow in the afternoon with accumulation of up to 1 inch expected. Forecast for Friday night, rain and snow with about 2 inches of snow expected, low temperatures around 31 degrees. Rain and snow expected on Saturday, and Saturday looks like rain with low temperatures around 37 degrees. Sunday, more rain with high temperatures around 38 degrees. Coming up next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to a June afternoon today. Have a great evening.